Hey, everybody. I know most of you. I'm Donna. I'm the Spiritual Programs Coordinator for Kadampa Center. And I'm going to take up just a couple of minutes of your time. First is an ad. We have a wonderful visiting teacher coming this coming weekend, Venerable Amy Miller. She's an American. She's a Buddhist nun and has been for quite a few years. And she's going to be teaching a workshop starting Friday evening and going through Sunday afternoon called Making Friends with Death. And since we're all going to go there, we might as well enjoy the ride. And so she's going to give us some tips on how to do that. And I have here a little spreadsheet that has some of the ways that if you're planning on coming, it would really be great if you volunteer. That it helps us a lot, and it's a great way to get a little more involved. And it's very easy jobs. We need people to act as greeters at the front door and just help people who are especially new to the center to know where to go leave their shoes and where to find the bathrooms and so forth. Setting up the water offering bowls, providing a beverage for Venerable Amy, and taking down the water offering bowls. And if you're also, oh, I know, all the driving slots are filled. Sorry, so that option is off the table. So I'm going to leave this with Erin, our wonderful program assistant. If you are interested in signing up for any of these, please do leave your name and your email or phone number there so I can contact you. And then I have only one other order of business. It is the end of our module. So it's the end of this particular visitation with Steep, our wonderful teacher. And No, not fun. Well, although, yes, we always welcome donations because all of our classes are offered on a donation basis, so that's really wonderful. But I'm actually here not to talk about your practice of generosity, but actually to talk about Kadampa Center's practice of generosity. Under the principle of karma, if you want things to happen in your life, you need to create the cause for them to happen. And in this place, one of the things that we think is most valuable and most important and that we want to always have continue to happen is to have the teachings and to have really wonderful, high-quality teachers like Stephanie here providing them. So our small way of trying to help make that happen and continue to happen is we have a little offering for sleep. So on behalf of the Kadampa Center.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Wow.
I'd like to surprise you with it.
Yes, I'm like...
Yes. Okay. Good night, everyone. Have a good time.
Okay, good night.
And the students like to individually thank our teachers here for this class in particular as well. And so we have a card going around, and I have stopped trying to get everybody to sign it and surprise you at the beginning of the class. So Guillermo has it now, and we'll make sure if you want to sign this card and say thank you to Steep individually, you make sure you find that card. So thank you from us individually. Thank you from the center. And, you know, we are the center. We know that.
We are.
But you know, we really appreciate people that prepare for class and lead us like that. All right. So I have a few things as well. So last week I mentioned that we have 3 weeks off before our next session and what to do for those 3 weeks. Those of us who stayed after kind of thought it would be nice to do something a little informal, maybe not at the center. So if you're interested in doing that, come to the little group afterwards and chat with us about meeting up somewhere on those Mondays that we don't have class here. Now, if that gets really, that group gets very big, we might say, oh, we're coming back to the center. So the way to find out about that would just be to check your email or check the calendar. Right now there's nothing planned for those 3 weeks here at the center. So organically something might happen. If something gets officially organized, it'll be on the calendar. But please, we welcome everybody. We want to be inclusive. We just don't have a completely solid plan yet, if that makes sense. Oh, also for our after-class group, I said I'd bring a chart of how the 12 links operate over 2 to 3 lifetimes. I brought the chart, so fun stuff. It's going to be happening after class. I also have a completion card for this class, which I copy and pasted and forgot to change the title. So it's Discovering Buddhism. This is the 9th module. It's supposed to say Samsara and Nirvana, so you're going to have to cross off daily practice, which was the last one, and write Samsara and Nirvana on there. And then you can check off if you did all these items. So every single module that we do has 5 components. I double-checked on the affiliate site and everything. Doesn't matter if it's here in the center or online. There are going to be teachings, which we're getting here, which is so lovely because they can be adapted to our questions and we get to have our little community. And some people really only have access to this online. And then the readings, which are the PDFs and the books, that's pretty standard. And then whatever our homework is, you know, if it's like sit down and meditate for 10 minutes every day, or if it's look into your life and find things, the buttons, and, you know, make sure you're addressing those and finding real world applications, do your homework. There's a test, like an official test, so the FPMT can kind of standardize. We all know the same things, and so that's online. And if you have any questions about that, just let me know. And the 5th thing is an intensive practice day, which I mentioned last week, just what's called a practice day. Intensive sounds like intense. But we are going to be doing one of these on Saturday, February 17th, focusing on some of the meditations that we've been doing in this class in particular. So it's kind of interesting because we did the first 2 modules at the end of last year, and then the 3rd module from last year is presenting the path. Well, those meditations, their first days on renunciation, which come back around to the meditations that you do for this class. So I'd be happy that there's information online about the kind of meditations that we'll be doing on that day, but kind of a little bit more standard Lamrim meditations. I think that's all I have to say about that, but fill out your completion card. If you do the first 3 parts of it, if you come to class, if you do the homework, if you do your reading, you get a beautiful little certificate from Kadampa Center. And then those kind of big things, the test and the whole practice day, you can save that for later. That's your FPMT qualification. So you can save that or keep working on it. Make a note. Like Steve has said before, you never know. At some point,
you never know. You never know. Geshe-la used to always say, because I used to really resist all the tests he had us do and all these things, and he'd say, you never know, one day you may be teaching some of this to somebody in any kind of format, just answering questions or sitting up here. And to be able to sit up here, then you have to have done like a certain number of mantras and all these things. I didn't set out with the intention to get any certificate to sit up here, but I was doing these things anyway, Geshe-la would tell me, because I'd ask him for a practice, and he'd say, okay, do this many mantras of this. Do this many prostrations, do this. And so I was just accumulating these things while FPMT was developing this. And so it all just kind of came together. So the information that she's talking about is a way for you to keep track. You may not have any intention right now of where it's going, but keep track of everything you've done because you've put in a lot of time. You've read things, and then you might look back and go, and I would like to try doing some mantras. So you just never know where it's leading. You might as well keep count of it.
Right, and you're doing those mantras for a purpose, for your own development, the same way that hopefully this day of meditations that we have are, you know, helping you gain some awareness or some insight or some wish to be out of samsara. That's the point of it. The point is not to check the boxes, but
right.
Why not check the boxes just in case?
Right, right.
So if this is the last official class and we don't get back together officially, the next one will be the beginning of March, How to Develop Bodhicitta with Don Brown. And I think I'll leave it at that. The weekend workshop with Venerable Amy. So Donna did mention that. Donna was up here. So this Friday is Venerable Amy is visiting, and yeah, it's called a weekend workshop. It's ideal to come to start Friday night and go all the way through. But do what you can. Come to what you can.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
All Alrighty, so so how's everybody doing? Fine? Okay. I am not sick, but I'm just feeling, tired, and everybody needs more rest right now, so we're going to have a nice, relaxing end of class. It does involve a test, but don't panic. You'll be in groups. You just answer it together. There's no score, but you'll be able to leave with something that has so kind of a summary of what we've been talking about. You'll be able to write down, and we'll do a kind of open group review. But let's start off with a little meditation. So get into a comfortable position. We got to just center ourselves, our minds, and let all the whole day roll off of us. And again, if you're in the chair, make sure your feet are flat on the floor, facing forward. Your back is straight. Your arms away from your body. You can use the hand mudra if you want for meditation. Tuck your chin a little bit. Strength lengthens your spine. Tongue at the back of your teeth. Your jaw relaxes. Your eyes either gently closed or a little bit open. And then for the first 5 minutes, we're just going to do a breathing focus meditation to focus your mind. Let all of its busyness kind of drop away. You can count your breaths if you'd like. Something to tie your mind back to, just relaxing, just focusing on the breath. And if you are super mindful, you'll notice that your thoughts, of course your thoughts are going to come in. And if you catch them early enough, it's like noticing a wave of thought energy kind of rising up. And instead of surfing on the wave all the way into some other territory, you can say to yourself, oh, here's a thought. And then you watch it kind of dissolve back into the ocean of your mind. And then there'll be another thought. But if you can rest between those rising waves, that's the whole point. To have that rest between those waves. Just like when you inhale and exhale, there's a rest between them. At the bottom of your exhale, there's a rest before you inhale. Same with your thoughts, your mind. And if you can rest between the rising, and if you can not follow your thoughts all over the place, then you put a bridle on that, or you have a little more awareness, and you can get some peace of mind in between all that thinking. Then after about 5 minutes, I will lead you in a little review meditation before we to help us set our intention. So go ahead and start counting your breaths from 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, whatever's better for you. Now bring your awareness to the past 3 days, the weekend, and today. Review it and find something that helped you remember where you are, that you are not in a pleasure grove, you're not in a pure land, you are in this cycle of samsaric existence. It doesn't have to be something awful, just something that's a reminder of samsara. And take a minute to think about something that reminds you that you have the ability to escape samsara, to build your own escape route. Something that reminds you of the power that you have to develop a way out. Could be something that happened, or something that you thought about, or something that you can think about. But a reminder of your ability. And take a moment to think about the greatest obstacle for you, whether it's anger, attachment, pride. Let's just stick to those three. Think of one that trips you up a little bit here and there, more than the others. Examples of them for yourself, of how they get in the way. And see if you can also imagine what it would be like if these were less, if you were able to reduce these or eliminate these in your life. Think of a concrete example. Of what it would be like if you were able to stop it before it blossomed completely. And we're able to apply the antidotes and loosen its grip on you. And then set your motivation for today's class, you know, that we're coming together to talk about this topic so that we can eliminate our afflicted mind states, so that we can start to build our escape route from this cyclic existence, so that we can find the way out for everyone else, for ourselves and everyone else. And then turn to page 34, and we'll say the refuge in generated bodhicitta prayer with that motivation. We'll say it 3 times, and each time trying to expand the motivation. So the first time we say it, we're saying it with the wish. You'll see it, you know, it's because you're developing bodhicitta through this. So, but for the first time, we're really thinking of, okay, we're going to be taking lives again and again, and therefore, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. Everybody, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. And now this time, thinking of the wish to get out of this cyclic existence, we are taking refuge in order to help us get out and escape cyclic existence and achieve nirvana. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And now for the highest, which is that we'll be able to get out and then be able to help all others achieve the same state. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And let's say the four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So we are definitely going to get to the homework, because there's some newer faces here, but that's okay, because you can think about it in the group. But the first thing I want to do is show this video, because I left something in the car that I need to pass out to you all. So this is like a 12-minute video, right, Chris? And it's with the Dalai Lama, and I can't remember exactly which one I picked. But it talks exactly to this whole concept of suffering and samsara and escape. So while you watch that, I'm going to go get the paper that you're going to use. Before I forget, when I was trying to explain to Geshe-la this thing about people feeling that, about this deserving, you know, it's really tough. You know, I was telling them how hard it is to talk about karma in this culture, and that people would say, oh, then you're saying that I deserve these terrible things that have happened, or this whatever. And, you know, he just had never thought about it like that, because that's not really the right way to think about it. And he said, no, well, you tell everybody who's saying that no, they deserve enlightenment. That's the whole point. And it's just like what I said last week about you have to know when to use the right tool. When are you going to use the tool of karma? When are you going to use the tool of looking at suffering? When are you going to use the tool of the antidotes that we talked about last week? When are we going to use the tool of rejoicing? You know, you're the one living your life, and you have to know which tool is right at which time. Because if you use one tool all the time, if you're always meditating on suffering, you know, your little boat's probably going to tip over. So you have to know how to get the right balance. And if you're, you know, remember that video we watched last week where it was showing kind of why this is the perfect realm in order to work on all of our processes and be liberated. So, remember that, because we're going to talk about that a little bit. So what I have here, there's nothing on it. It doesn't say test. I'm not going to pick it up. It's for you to take home. But we're going to get in small groups so that you can answer these together as a group, or you can do it by yourself. It's completely up to you. Yeah, they're pretty self-explanatory. Towards the end, you don't have to talk about this in your group if you don't want to, but the last one says, list one of the afflicted mind states that you are most aware of being an obstacle for you, and how will you apply its antidote? Give concrete examples. So, you know, write that for yourself, so that then, you know, in 3 months from now or a year from now, you look at that and you go, oh, that one's changed now. Now it's a different one I'm working on. But I find it super helpful. Like, I look back at all these tests that Geshe-la gave me, and first of all, I'm impressed that I knew those things then. I'm like, wow. And it also is just a really handy-dandy thing to pick up and remind myself. because it's a lot to look at, a lot to try to remember, all these different lists. Okay, so I think I have enough for everybody. Don't fight. We can make copies. And why don't you get into groups of like no more than five, so that you can have a chance to they're coming. So go ahead and get into your groups of about five and get into different areas, and I'll give you like say 20 minutes to work on them. If you need pens or pencils, let me know because we can get some. That'll be easy. You need one? Okay, here's one right here. Yeah, I think that was a pencil. Let me get a pen for you.
Okay.
I think Aaron's going out to get something. You need one too? No, you got one. Okay, here's an extra. Okay, so make sure you're in a group of five if you'd like to discuss this. She's getting some? Okay, thanks. Okay, so here's a group, right?
Yep.
Just pull up a chair and introduce yourselves. It can be fun to commiserate with... And for some of them, there's no one right answer, you know, like it says write one sentence. It'll be interesting to see what different people write about it. We have pens now in the room, if you need one. Okay. Right. Of course. Is everybody ready? Come on back. I see a lot of great work happening. All right. So we're going to make sure everybody, you know, has something. We'll kind of come to a consensus on what you need to have here. Some of them are lots of different ways that you could define some of these things, but at least we have to make sure we all have a common understanding. All right, so identify renunciation. I heard a lot going on, so I think you all have renunciation. Any questions about that? So do you remember like when we use the analogy of the North Korean prison camp, and I said, the minute you realize I'm in prison and I want to get out, that's renunciation, right? The wish to end suffering, the wish to get out. I also gave you that definition that I really liked that this Zen Buddhist writer wrote in this book. She said, renunciation does not mean going away from the world. It means knowing the world goes away. Because the main thing that I guess I want you to know is that we have this kind of stereotypical view of a renunciant being somebody who's just like in a thread of clothes, just, you know, not eating rocks, you know, stuck in a cave. And
not a balanced diet.
You need, in fact, some of the prayers you do before you eat are like, I'm going to eat this food so that I can keep on developing a bodhicitta and be able to help all along the way. So it's mostly that you've developed that wish for liberation, the wish to end suffering. Okay, so then what is liberation? Well, I guess I kind of answered that, huh? Does everybody have a good handle on that?
Oh, I didn't know you were asking.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't talk to the microphone.
The microphones have been liberated from this room.
The first answer I put freedom of ignorance. And by that I kind of meant, you know, kind of we have these ignorant views in the world, you know, kind of like we're not seeing, you know, emptiness, just these false goals that, you know, once we get everything perfectly lined up, we'll be perfectly happy and everything will be fine. You know, that these bad people are just bad and that's why they're bothering me. I'm not looking any deeper than that. And I think, you know, in a way, you know, liberation would be from freedom from that ignorance. And then the other answer that I have here is something someone from my group said, was which was realization and liberation are simultaneous, which I thought was interesting as well. So.
Okay.
Realization and liberation are simultaneous.
So what I would add to that is, in this context, you know, liberation is you're liberated from the prison camp. You're liberated from that endless cycle of samsara. And so it takes liberation from the afflicted aggregates. Ignorance is a huge one because it's what we don't know. You know, it's what we don't know. And it's because of ignorance that we keep on ending up in this cycle of existence. Yeah.
Is liberation enlightenment?
So you're out of the prison camp, but complete enlightenment is when you've developed the desire and the wish and the ability to... Yeah. Yeah. And so what also Geshe-la would say, because this is a complicated topic, that even at some level of liberation, there's still in the mind stream tendencies. It doesn't mean that you're going back down. You know, you're not going to fall back down into samsaric existence, but you haven't completely rid the mind stream of some of these tiny subtle tendencies. Yeah. So since I'm not even close to it, I don't really know what that means, but I, you know, intellectually I'm like, okay, I can see that. Yeah. Was there any other question about that? Okay. So then samsara. What is samsara? I've kind of already answered that. Right, but technically, you know, it's that cycle of existence, right? And you saw the whole wheel, you know, and that's a good thing to keep going back to and looking at that wheel. And we have the link online. But another way you can, you know, there's lots of ways in your own life that you can think about samsara. You know, the Groundhog Day movie was a great example of that. Just, oh my God, again. I dabble in astrology, with a lot of Tibetan Buddhists use astrology to help just kind of predict causes and conditions. So one of the things I found interesting in astrology is that each sign, the problems of each sign, the answer to the problems of each sign is found in the next sign. But that just goes all the way around, all the way around. There's never a complete answer. It's like, okay, the problems for an Aries are solved with Taurus. But you just keep going, it just keeps going, it just keeps going. So you can find lots of examples like that in your own life of something that just goes like this, and there's no way out. Arguments are often like that. Since I mediate arguments all day long, I can tell you that they have this way of just going around and around until somebody helps you see something outside of that circle. Okay. All right, list the Four Noble Truths. And then there's little nicknames you can give to each of them, too. But the first noble truth is a noble truth of suffering, the truth of suffering, yeah. The second noble truth, the causes of suffering. The third noble truth, the cessation of suffering. And the fourth noble truth, the truth of the path, the way to start ending this suffering, right? So, and you can just give them those little nicknames if you want, you know, the truth of suffering, causes, cessation, and path, as long as you really know what all that means. And then why would we want to, we've been focusing a lot here on the first two. But also, you know, if you go deeper into this, like I was talking to Geshe-la, so the Four Noble Truths, we could talk for years about the Four Noble Truths. And actually, everything in Buddhism really goes back to them. And I was telling Geshe-la, you know, we're talking about the Four Noble Truths in this very kind of coarse, obvious way, the truth of suffering. Then there's a whole other teaching, which we haven't even, you know, gotten close to, which is the more subtle way of looking at the Four Noble Truths, which involves emptiness then. the same truths, but looking at it more from the truth of suffering, and then you're weaving in emptiness into all of these things. And it gets to the different kind of schools of Buddhism and how they're approaching all of these things. So I'm just saying all this so that, you know, it's super complicated. We have got this little space here, so you write those four down. But don't stop, because there's a lot to it. And the more, you know, the more you ask Geshe-la, you could ask Geshe-la, would you teach us about, you know, the more subtle teachings on the Four Noble Truths? He's waiting for us to ask him. You know, if we ask him, we would like a weekend teaching on patience.
Okay.
He'll do that. If we say we would like to have a teaching on the Four Noble Truths, then he will, you know, he'll take that into consideration and try to talk to Donna and book a weekend. So I say that to you all as a class, but I also say individually, he is here. He studied his whole life so that he could answer your questions, as simple as they may be or as complex as they may be. And I set his calendar. So all you have to do is send me an email and say, I'd really like to meet up with Geshe-la. And he either stay on a Sunday afterwards and talk to you, or, you know, you can set up a time. You may ask him, like, you know, this is where I am in my practice. What do you think I should do next? What should I meditate on? What should I do? What do you think? If you're ready for his answer, he may say, well, you need to meditate more on that, or how about some mantras? He's not going to give you anything that you're going to fail at, unless, you know, he's not going to set you up for failure. But anyway, I'm just encouraging you, anyone, to ever take advantage of the time that he's here, because he does spend quite a bit of the year traveling, and it's usually right before he travels that I get all these emails saying, I have to talk to Geshe-la. So take advantage of the fact that he's here right now. If you want to set up a time and talk to him about your practice, that's music to his ears. He's not going to ask you. He's waiting for you to ask him. And the other thing, like, you know, thanking me, if you should thank him, because I was such a pest that I learned some of these things, and I can give you these examples that are more concrete, because, you know, I just bothered him a lot. And so it's to him, it's worth his lifetime of practice that he sees that, okay, I spent all this time answering her questions, and now she's able to turn around and do, you know, help a little bit here and there. So, all right. Next question. Describe how an understanding of the Four Noble Truths can affect one's daily life and bring about the attainment of nirvana and Buddhahood. Just a simple question. Well, what's a short answer? Anybody have a short answer they want to share? Just to make sure we're all on the same page. Kevin's got the mic. Kevin's got an answer. Yeah. There's a hand up.
Because we've been talking a lot about the first two, mm-hmm. I keep going to, you know, good motivation for practice and purification and for positive action, because, and for kind of changing how we look at things by mm-hmm. recognizing that we're in suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if we don't, yeah.
I just said we are all suffering. We all want to be happy. So, like, making my goal to relieve others' suffering would help me on my own path to liberation.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a hand up back there.
One of the things that's happened to me in understanding suffering is that when people are behaving in a negative way, I don't have to feel attacked mm-hmm. by their behavior. I'm much more able now to see their suffering and that they are responding from their own suffering and that it isn't personal, even
right.
though it feels like you're being threatened. And that has really transformed the way I move through the day,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of nasty stuff going on out there, and when you can kind of diffuse it,
right,
it's pretty powerful in terms of how you can relate to that person and diffuse some of their interactions with you because of that.
Right, right. Thank you.
Well, and to recognize that it's welling up and you don't have to own it. You know, that's it's coming up there.
Mm-hmm. You know, like I think we, in some of the readings we were talking about last week, one of the questions was, you know, somebody's doing something. What's your part in this? What are you contributing? Whether, how are you thinking about it that's contributing or playing into this or not playing into this? But, you know, somebody's acting like a jerk on the highway. What's your part in this? Are you speeding up a little bit? Are you getting angry? You know, what's going on for you? That's the part that you can work on. And the other thing that I think about meditating on suffering that helps is that's what develops our compassion. And we cannot really get free of this cycle without developing huge compassion. So understanding how we're stuck, you know, really gives us compassion for everybody else. Like that example I told you when that woman at the assisted living said, you know, we're all here for a reason, and those of us who know it turn around and help somebody else. So knowing this is the reason I'm here, here's my reasons why I'm here. Now I know everybody else is here, I'm going to try to help somebody. And there was something else. Oh, a friend of mine, her husband just was in complete denial that he had diabetes most of their life together. And now, you know, he's legally blind and he's got all these problems. And it was just that denial, like, I don't have that. And so then the meditating on what we do have, you know, of course we don't want to have these things. That's why if it was just the first noble truth, we would be really miserable. But knowing that, okay, there's a way out. So first I have to look at what do I have? And that's another example they use a lot, like understanding that you have an illness. Because there is medicine and there is a doctor. So the medicine is the Dharma and the doctor are the teachers. And I am the patient. But if we don't think we have any illness, then we're just going to pass all that by. We're just going to miss our chance completely. So and because we're in such a beautiful setting, it requires having to kind of go back time and time again and say, yeah, okay, this isn't going to really help me get liberated. Yeah.
One thing that is not mentioned a lot is how your own actions contribute to others' suffering and their own cyclic, they're perpetuating their own cyclic existence.
How your actions feed into that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that these Discovering Buddhism classes have done, particularly for me, is to have put the attention instead of outside inward,
mm-hmm.
and how have like compassion for others through my actions,
mm-hmm.
how my actions actually perpetuate mm-hmm. others'
yeah.
psychic existence.
Yeah.
So that it's like a huge motivator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it helps us then look at, well, what can we do if so many of the things we're doing are really not helpful to people? Well, at minimum, we can wish them better, right? At minimum, we can try not to do harm. Okay, so first do no harm. And then if I can't really hack this person the way that I wish I could, I know what Geshe-la does a lot is say, because I asked him once, like he was, say we were feeding the ducks together. He's saying all these mantras. And he said, just think next time we might be able to be teaching them mantras. They won't be ducks. They'll be people. And we'll be teaching them. So he's always has this much longer range view than I do. I'm like, oh, look at the cute duck. He's like, he's saying these mantras thinking next cycle I'll be able to help them better. So what can I do now with already the wish that next time around I can do more, you know? Yeah.
I think for the daily life one, thinking about the Four Noble Truths also kind of helps you take stock of what your habits are,
mm-hmm.
which can go a long way in kind of discovering, kind of being a compass for where you are in your practice.
Yeah.
What things are you not mindful enough about that you're doing because they're a habit? My little key phrase for people who know the reference was, the cake is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, And because your daily life is built up of many of your own habits,
mm-hmm.
Understanding what are the things that will happen because of indulging in those habits,
mm-hmm.
and where that places you within your own practice, and what you can do about it.
Yeah.
Like, what things do I really need to apply an antidote for?
Right. And when can you interrupt the things that have just become kind of autopilot? You know, and so like I told you all that time that I was in the airport, and I thought, wait a minute, this is one of those times that Geshe-la said to think something different. So finding, you know, reminding yourself, like having a little thing on your phone that just goes off every once in a while so that you can, even at that moment, try to set your motivation. Don't just wait until DB class to set your motivation. You know, throughout the day, check your motivation and try to set it. Even just doing it once in a while is huge. You know, I used to try to kind of keep track of things like that. I used to just mark little dots on my hand, you know, if I was thinking the way I wanted to be thinking and trying to correct things. But, yeah, because we get into huge habits. That's the whole point, that we're carrying over these habits are like a tidal wave. And anything that we can do now to kind of shift that a little bit is huge. It's huge. But we'll need to, you know, keep cheering ourselves on. Because it's, and I mean, to me, that's what this is all about, is coming in and kind of checking in and tweaking it. And I know for me, part of my problem was I wasn't including myself. I was being so, you know, taking care of all these other people over here. I think I was twisting some of it somehow. And then Geshe-la said, you're not including yourself. You know, when you're saying the four immeasurable prayers, may all beings, da, 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 because that also includes you. So you also have to take care of yourself primarily so that you can do all these other things. And I was just thinking I was being very good by doing all of this, but I wasn't including myself. It took me a while to see how I had twisted some of it and needed to get back to, okay, what do I need? I need to also include what I need here. I don't need to ignore that. It's tricky.
I was actually practicing that today.
Okay, you were practicing that today? Yeah. Yeah, we have to remember that.
Too much of doing things and then mm-hmm. they're not done anything else to move forward. Because everybody wants their time.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody wants your time. So, you know, so that's when we talk about the two wings of wisdom and compassion. And so, you know, people who are very, very compassionate but not showing a whole lot of wisdom and so then get taken advantage of. And people who are super wise about things but kind of lacking in compassion sometimes. And then that's why that whole balance comes in. And that a bodhisattva would be able to know, is this a time to be super compassionate in this way and selfless or, you know, to balance it more. In the meantime, we try.
Because when you're teaching bodhisattva,
uh-huh.
I mean, there is a tendency for the people
when you're teaching bodhisattva, right?
Mm-hmm.
The practice can make you become always be there for
mm-hmm.
people, and then you can also be very vulnerable.
Right, you can be vulnerable. You can get into a lot of codependency.
Yeah.
You can actually not be helpful. You can actually continue somebody's problem, though your intention is good, your motivation is good. So we just have to do what we can and know that we're not there yet. But if we're constantly looking at our intention and our motivation, that's the best start. You know, so my intention is to help. But maybe this is not the best thing to do. Maybe it's just continuing somebody's suffering. Okay, so let's talk about the three main categories of suffering, just because that was something that we covered, and I want to make sure at least people have those three down. So remember the suffering of suffering. Remember that? Just the obvious, like, you know, the flu, standing in the line at work, the whatever is just the obvious suffering that even animals understand. It doesn't always have to be physical; it can certainly be mental. But the suffering of suffering, and then the suffering of change. You know, so you've walked a long time, you're really ready to sit down, you sit, now you're being forced to sit forever now. That turns into suffering. That nothing pleasant ever stays that way. It will shift into suffering. And then all-pervasive suffering, which is the fact that because we have these aggregates, this body, all the things that come together to form us, that is the very vessel of our suffering. It's also the vessel for our liberation, but it's also the thing that's holding all these things we call suffering. So I think we've talked about the other one. How does the meditation on suffering impact one's daily life in a positive way? To me, it's also remembering that if you're going to meditate on the fact that you're in prison, you've got to meditate on the fact that there's release from the prison. And so when you get those moments that you are actually able to reduce whatever is your particular chain or fence, that's huge, and to hold on to that. You know, so if you're able to reduce for that moment something that was just arising and you're able to get free from it, that's a little trailer of the coming attractions. And that's huge. And then, so this was kind of the one that we had for homework, you know, to take something that's a particular obstacle for you and try to work on it this week, last week, in the ways that I had described, like when I was in the airport. Anybody have any examples you want to share as we kind of wind up this class? Did anybody have any experiences of... it doesn't have to be a success story. It could be it didn't work. We'll cheer you on for the next time. Yeah.
I have a failure story.
Okay.
So we were just talking, like, anger or lack of patience is definitely one of my challenges I work on daily. But at work I'm pretty good about, you know, little things don't bother me. I don't really get angry at people. Mm-hmm. And so I was having a conflict with someone, and it happens to be that my parents own the company I work for, mm-hmm. and they work in a different office, but sometimes they are in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't run our office, but they like to be in there, right? So we were having a differing opinion about the way that something was happening in there. And I was really cool and calm about it because kind of like what she was saying, like I knew that she felt like she didn't have control over something she had control over before, and that made her uncomfortable, and I was cool with that and trying to work through it. So I was, you know, staying really cool, and she wasn't even listening to me, and, you know, I would get two syllables in, and her mouth was already open, and she was, you know, ready to react back to what I was saying before I said it. And I said, "You're kind of reacting back before I've even said anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously angry, and I get it, so... I don't think we're going to solve anything right here. You know, maybe mm-hmm. you can just go back, and when I'm not making you angry, you can think about it, and then we can have a more productive conversation."
Mm-hmm.
And it totally backfired on me. She was like, you know, don't talk to me like that. I'm just trying to solve a problem. So I did try, and that one backfired. But usually it goes a little bit better than that.
Yeah. Was this your mother?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Well, this is like going to the Super Bowl. I think that's a huge, challenging one. How did you feel at the end of all of that?
I just laughed and shrugged, and I was like, that was all I knew to do. I mean, I
okay.
tried, and I just figured, and I know, you know, I know her. She'd go back, and she'll think about it.
Right.
It was just by me actively saying, you'll probably go back and think about this. She didn't like that, which introduced
right.
a different type of suffering. So I just stopped and said, okay, we'll just talk about it later when you're ready.
So I guess I would say that's not such a big failure, because if you're saying that you didn't lose your patience.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So we can't be, you know, it'd be nice if nobody else lost their patience too, but the main goal was for you and your mind state.
Oh yeah, well then.
Then you succeeded. Yes, one for you. Thank you for telling us that one. But yeah, no, I think that's a success, because you were trying something so that you would not get angry, and you didn't, you know. To be able to kind of stand outside of it and see what's happening, that's huge. And super challenging while work and parents. Yeah. Did you have one, Kevin?
But I had an epic fail like that. Usually I use driving because I commute a half hour, 45 minutes, and I was doing an errand, helped my daughter out with some science fair, and that went good, and I was in a great mood, and pre-coffee really kicking in, and someone came up behind me, cut me off, and just, I'm from up north, and use a horn liberally, but just they laid on the horn, and I usually if you're prepared for it or you're in that mindset, but I was not prepared and went from 0 to 60. I got angry. Yeah. I haven't been like that in a while, and it's those moments when you don't expect it.
Right.
Because if you can slowly recognize it, see it rising,
right,
and apply your antidote, take a breath and push it aside. But it's amazing how even if you think you got that down, that
I know. It can flare up really, really quickly. Yeah, you're right. If you can see it coming, like sometimes when I'm driving and I know, okay, this is going to be difficult, I just pretend like I'm on drugs or something, you know? Like, I had to have a colonoscopy and they gave me these incredible drugs, and after the whole day I was like, everything is fine. And so now I try to, like, pretend like, okay, I just, I'm like that again, you know? Everything is great. I don't care. And sometimes it helps. Sometimes it helps. But yeah, it's when you're not preparing, it's like, rawr! Yeah.
So I have another mother one. There is hope. My mom's 95. Mm. And she's always irritated me a lot. I'd probably irritate her too. But recently, and I think it's as a result of a lot of the stuff here, I started hugging her because I would not even hug her for years.
Mm.
She'd come at me and try and squeeze my face and stuff, and it's like, stop that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a genuine, I'm trying to care.
Mm-hmm.
I have to take her to Catholic Church every other Sunday, which is a real challenge. But again, I'm doing it to make her happy because it's so important to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to realize it doesn't matter what faith it is.
Right.
There are really good people doing really good stuff and some sweet, wonderful things are happening there, even though it's taken me time to get used to the choir. And last week I didn't even pay attention to the choir, so it's really good. And then one last thing. I invited her over for the Super Bowl because she's a sports buff. And I learned from her this little incident. She brought over a bunch of candy because she got way too much candy. Everybody keeps giving her candy. And she tried to give it to me, and I'm like, we don't really eat candy. I'll take some, but take the rest back. And she's like, I don't really want it. And I'm like, well, why don't you put it out, like, in the common area for the other people? Because she's in, you know, a community living place. And she's like, no, I don't want to do that, because then all the people I don't like are going to eat it. Normally I would have gone like, Mom!
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't say anything, and I gave her the candy. And I'm going to wait and see if she changes her mind and actually does that. And if she doesn't, then I am going to actually take the candy and do something else with it. But that was kind of an exercise in patience to not criticize her and say, you idiot, why don't you just give them the candy? She was attached to it. It was a gift to her. And even though she doesn't want it, she doesn't want to give it away to other people, which I thought was really interesting. So there is hope to develop better relationships with your moms over time.
And also, like, you know, Geshla talks about how we get stuck in watching other people's movies, their minds, and we want, and he says, you have enough going on with your own movie. Pay attention to watch your own movie and, you know, get out of their movie. Your movie is about, you're helping. How amazing, you know, to just try to spend some energy helping your mother. Who cares what church she goes to? It's feeding her. You know, this is what she wants to do. But, you know, but getting involved in, well, what are they thinking about this and trying to change their movie? It's just like, it has this energy that will just pull us and never let us go. And so he said that a long time ago, and this friend of mine in New Orleans still remembers that, and she says she must say it to herself like once a day, like, get out of their movie. You know, that's not my movie. This is my movie, and I got my hands full.
I'm enjoying the conversations and particularly recognizing that I spent most of my life not only writing my own movie, but everybody else's movie too. And I was create a great micromanager. Mm-hmm. I mean, par excellence. And so attachment and control are big things for me. And one of the things that the teachings have helped me with is understanding, particularly with one of my children, who I love dearly, but whose development has not gone in the way that I expected nor approve of.
Mm-hmm.
So I am now able to say that is his karma,
mm-hmm.
and it's really not my business.
Mm-hmm.
He is a grown-up, and it's been very freeing for me. I still worry about him. I still love him, and I express my loves in ways that are healthier than I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teachings have given me permission,
mm-hmm.
not to mind everybody else's business.
Right. Well, that's a beautiful story. I mean, because I think the challenge of being a parent, where you have to be all in it, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to back off, it's got to be huge. Yeah.
Another way to look at the thing that happened, no?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we disconnect from ourselves and we think that other people's actions are independent of
mm-hmm.
ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
No? Another way to look at the things is that we are creating the things
mm-hmm.
from where we need to learn.
Right.
Now, let's see, you face the situations and say, I created. Or why I created, because some things that I did before
mm-hmm.
are just showing up. So mm-hmm. if I look at these situations with these things, it's like a mirror,
mm-hmm.
no? And I could see myself in a mirror or another people and say, hey, wait a minute, what I need to change in myself.
Mm-hmm.
In order that these things end to happen, no?
Mm-hmm.
And certain point is like we are living our own world, no? You want to change the world, you need to change yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you change it is the way the world is going to show up, no?
Yeah, and when that kind of thinking helps, when that's the right tool, you know, it might be the right tool for you more than it's for somebody else. But then that, no one to apply that. You know, when will that help? It's kind of similar to that, but it also relates to the traffic that this woman had this great exercise where you imagine that you're canoeing down this river. You're in this boat, you're in this canoe going down this river, and there's this other boat coming right towards you. And so, you know, first of all, you get into this meditative state to do this. And so you kind of notice like what's going on in your body as you see this boat coming towards you and you're trying to get it to stop and it's coming closer and closer to you and it's going to hit your canoe and you're getting really scared and furious that this other boat is headed right at you and is going to hit you and is going to turn you over and so on and so forth. And then you see at the very last minute, there's nobody in the boat. The boat's empty. It's still going to hit you. But your whole thinking changes because before you're angry at this person. You have this whole story going on about how could this person do this to you, right? And then at the end, you're like, oh, there's nobody in there. If you could, from the beginning, this is what I try to do with cars. If I could kind of see them as just floating objects on the road that I have to pay super close attention to so that I don't get hit, but take the story out of like, oh, this jerk, you know, and I come up with a whole story about what's going on. Why don't I come up with that story? Why didn't I come up with a different story? But I come up with really worst case scenario stories. Instead, if I just saw them empty of people,
and they're just obstacles that I have to do like a video game, then I would be, I might still get angry, but I don't think it would be quite as intense. And so there's things that we can do like that to still do what we have got to do to get through the day without having all the story, without getting to everybody's movies, without all the extra stuff that we lay on top of it, like you were saying with your son, you know, that we can still relate and be as wise as we can be, but not have this extra layer. And that's the whole point. When you start to pull off that extra layer, then we can act with more wisdom and without, and with compassion. And so it's, you know, one step at a time, and we have to be really kind to ourselves. And it's helpful if you keep like little notes in the diary, because you'll think, I have made no progress. I've been studying this. I've been meditating. I've been making no progress, but you have. That's why I wanted you to write some stuff down, and you will. I remember in the beginning, I could not sit and meditate for 5 minutes. It was just freaking me out. I mean, I tried forever. I would just fall asleep. It was just like, how come I can't fall asleep at night, but I can meditate and I'm out? And it took me a long, long, long time. And I even just would stand up so that I could have some success, because my motto when I'm working with people in my job is that nothing's going to change until you have some success. So make sure you have some success. Don't start with the hardest thing. Make sure you have some success. So I would stand up, and I would just stand there. I think, well, you know, okay, I can't sit and meditate. I'm going to stand and meditate for 2 minutes. And that gave me some confidence. Hey, I could actually do it standing up. So after I did that for a while, then I could sit, and I could meditate maybe for 1 minute. And if I could do it for 1 minute, I knew I could do it for two. And then eventually, but it took a long time. Longer than you would guess. So all that, I'm just trying to give you a cheer, because it, you know, with practice, whatever your personal hope is that you want to accomplish, you will start. Even just having that wish is huge. It will start. You know, you're creating this whole ripple effect. Things don't just disappear. Your wish for it will not just disappear. And then, worst case, you get the big picture scenario, and you know you are setting in motion a tidal wave. Whether you see the complete result of it in today, tomorrow, or this lifetime, you've already put something in motion. Okay, so let's wind up. Let's dedicate all this merit, incredible merit you've created by all the stories you've just shared about the things that you've been working on as a result of studying Buddhism and thinking about suffering and all the meditations and homework and reading. Huge. Huge. Helping parents, helping children, helping each other. Coming here on Monday nights, sharing your stories with each other. Being patient with me, being patient with each other. It's huge. So I want you to think of all that you've created through your actions of body, just by getting here, your actions of speech, by listening, by talking, by sharing with each other, and your mind, setting your intention, and then following through. These are epic successes. So now you are dedicating them so that all this merit you've created will grow in the direction that you have dedicated them. And I might suggest that you dedicate them so that you can be liberated. You're liberating yourself from samsaric existence. You are achieving the highest state of wisdom and compassion. You can be completely enlightened and liberate all other beings one step at a time. Now let's turn to Shanti Deva's prayer. What page is that? 247? 246. Okay, and just again, just by saying this prayer with the wish that these things could happen, again, huge merit. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creatures suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains, bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. All right. Thank you. Keep on keeping on. Okay.